Good morning. Thank you very much for that introduction. Thanks for coming to listen. The introduction is very helpful. I didn't know you were going to read the whole thing out, but I was really trying to create a read across so that people who are most interested in children didn't switch off completely when I'm going to be talking about alcohol. And I think sort of the added comment that I'd make is that most people who consume alcohol have started drinking quite young in their lives, so I don't think that an audience with interest in children would have no appreciation of the fact that a lot of the kids will be drinking alcoholic beverages in any case. But hopefully this will be of interest to all of us who are interested in the health and well-being of our communities, and particularly in relation to healthy weight. So our moderator has already described the work of the organisation that I chair. I'm not going to go through that again. That's a very helpful description, thank you. I have no declarations to make. The work that I'm going to be describing was conducted by the staff of the Royal Society for Public Health with no external funding. And I'd like to acknowledge the hard work of the staff that put many hours into this. So just by way of background from the UK, I think our story is probably very similar to many countries of the world now gripped with this obesity pandemic. So the levels of obesity in the UK have risen dramatically in the last 20 years, and the predicted levels, if we don't start doing better, are that over 50% of women and 60% of men will be obese by 2050, but we're already at very high levels of obesity. And children are measured in our schools. All children are measured at the ages of 4 to 5 and 10 to 11. So we already know the levels of obesity. If children leaving primary school at the age of 11, in many inner city areas, it's more than 50% are obese or overweight. So we know that in children we have a massive problem, and that's borne out by in adults. So where are we with labelling in the UK? At the moment we have voluntary labelling, apart from allergens. So from the end of next year, the nutritional labelling on the back of packs will be mandatory. The UK is a member of the European Union, and labelling of nutritional products, foods and drinks, is an European Union competency. So that means we're governed by the EU in the labelling of our food products. And that's just a by the by, but it's a sort of an interesting observation that we're not necessarily governing our destiny in terms of the UK. We're reliant on European legislation. So at the moment, as far as the front of pack is concerned, we've got lots of different systems in place. They're all voluntary. The one that the government particularly supports is the, we call it traffic lights, the use of green, amber, red to suggest whether foods are more or less healthy. And you've got very similar labelling systems here. But at the moment in our system, they're all voluntary. We were interested in looking at the connection between how much people drink in terms of alcoholic drinks and the extent to which those drinks might be contributing to the obesity epidemic. We've got safe drinking levels that the government has published and supports. I put those up really just for information. We just discovered quite recently that units of consumption are rather a parochial European entity and not something that necessarily an American audience would be familiar with. So you've got glasses there to show you how much alcohol is in these drinks. We also discovered through a UK-wide poll, not conducted by ourselves, but a very large poll, that people have got a bit of an appreciation of what healthy drinking is about and what unhealthy drinking is about, but actually that more than half the population thinks that you have to get drunk on a regular basis to indulge in harmful drinking. or binge drinking, where you're drinking a lot at one session. And of course, regular, relatively low-level drinking, if you're exceeding the weekly recommended safer allowance, is dangerous too. Where are we with labelling? Not very far, as you can see. We know from the national research done that amongst people who drink, so ordinary social drinkers, not talking about people who drink excessively or harmfully, but amongst ordinary social drinkers, about 10% of our calorie intake comes from alcohol. We don't think many people appreciate that or understand it. And that was where we were coming from in conducting our campaign and our projects, which I'm just about to discuss. According to the current European Union legislation, alcoholic beverages are completely exempt from nutritional labelling. So, and that applies to the mandatory labelling that's coming in at the end of next year. And it's, for some reason which we don't understand fully, drinks above 1.2% alcohol by volume. There are exceedingly few alcoholic drinks with less than that amount of alcohol in. So effectively it means that all alcoholic drinks are exempt from nutritional labelling. So we've got nothing to work on in terms of legislation. We conducted an opinion poll, an online poll of 2,100 people, just over 2,100. And two-thirds of those people said yes, they were in favour of labelling, of calorie labelling of alcoholic drinks. So we knew we were starting from somewhere that says, okay, the public wouldn't be averse to this. And we also found, so I'm going to say, a very ignorant public. So although they were quite enthusiastic about labelling, they knew very little about what they were drinking. I've put in this as sort of a statement that says, okay, we are talking about sugar-sweetened beverages to some extent, in line with the title of the session. Alcopops, despite any legislation that's in our country and I suspect in yours, are definitely marketed at kids, and they're full of sugar, and typically they contain more than 170 calories per little bottle per drink. I've put ciders in here because sweet cider is one of the cheapest forms of alcohol you can buy in the UK, very often cheaper than sodas, and very high in calories, and certainly open to be purchased by older teens who may well be buying for their friends. And actually, although we have regulation about selling to people underage, it's not very well policed. But mostly we're talking about adult drinkers in our research. So part of our online research of these 2,100 people, we asked them how many calories they thought were in a typical glass of a wine. A large glass is 250 mils, which is a third of a bottle of wine, but typical of the size that if you go into an ordinary bar or a pub in England, and ask for a glass of wine, you're likely to get a large glass these days, which is 250 mils. So we asked people how many calories they thought they contained, and you can see here, we use the word guess. I mean, there might have been a few people actually knew the answer, but we've assumed that most people were guessing. But you know, the upshot was that not very many knew the number of calories, whether they knew it genuinely or they guessed it correctly, only 16%. And similarly, we asked them how many calories they thought were in a pint of lager. A pint is 568 mils, for those of you who don't know what a UK pint is. But we drink our beer, our warm beer or our cold beer in pints in Britain. And again, only 10% of the online sample of UK adults had any idea, really, that of the calorie value. You can note that I haven't told you yet. Okay, so as well as the online survey, which told us that people were interested in labelling, they were mostly in favour, it was two-thirds in favour, but they didn't have a clue at the moment what the calorie value of drinks were. The next thing that we did was a little experiment. We went to a pub just around the corner from our offices in London, and it's quite a sort of a cultural thing. I don't know if many of you have been to London and mm-hmm. spent a bit of time there. Okay, so culturally it's very common for people to pop into their pub, the local pub, after work. So we, our offices are in an area with a lot of other office accommodation, a lot of local employers. So people pop into the pub, quite often young adults, people in their 20s, 30s, maybe 40s, at the end of the working day and go in for a drink or two before they go home. And they go home for their meal. Usually they may have some chips or some little snack, but they mostly will have a couple of drinks and go home. So we played some games in a pub with some people that we invited to volunteer. Some of them, there's not a scientific research piece with any, I don't want to claim that it is. It was a neat little experiment that we really enjoyed, and so did the participants. So we invited people to sit at some tables. We invited them to choose drinks from menu, which we then gave them. We didn't charge them for the drinks. That was the draw from their point of view, is that they weren't paying for drinks. We gave them some bar games to play, so these are little desktop games, and told them that we were going to watch them playing their games and drinking their drinks. And after a couple of hours, and we tallied exactly what people were choosing to drink and how much they were drinking. And after a couple of hours, we added it all up. And then we went back and talked to them about how much they'd enjoyed the session and you know what they think that we were doing. The big difference between them, which they didn't know, at the two tables of drinkers, was one had the menu including calorie labelling, and the other had a label that had a menu that didn't include calorie labelling. And that's what the menu looked like, the one that included the calories. And what we found was that the group that had the calorie labelling drank an amazingly smaller number of calories than the other. Okay, this is about 40% less than the other group. So it's a tiny little sample. It wasn't particularly random. They kind of were, you know, friends of friends and people that just popped into the pub. You know, once we got two tables full, we stopped counting. So snowball sample, not claiming any great scientific rigour, but it's difficult to dismiss it completely when the people drank so differently. And we spent some time interviewing the folk. We've got a video, I think it might be available on our website, where we asked people what they thought. The people who sat at the table with the calorie values, that's the one thing that they pointed out to us, that they said to us they thought it was really unusual to be given a drinks menu that had calorie labelling on it. Had it influenced them? They all said yes, most certainly it had influenced their choice of drinks. And the other table, of course, didn't know what they were missing, and they were choosing their drinks in the way that we would all choose our drinks normally in a bar from a standard menu. So really interesting stuff, and people were saying to us, yeah, it really did influence our choices. The guys and girls on the table that didn't have the labels were saying we would have liked that too. It would have made a difference to our choices. So just fascinating. It's in medical terms, I'd call it a fascinoma, and it means that we need more research done to find out what really is going on there. But it might be that calorie labelling is a significant feature in allowing people to make choices about what they drink. So there we go. I thought we might play a little bit of game with yourselves, if anybody's willing. So a 250ml glass is a large glass of wine that you get in a restaurant or a bar here. Or in the UK for that matter. Anybody want to tell us how many calories that you think it might contain? No willing volunteer? Have a figure? Yeah, yes. Go for it. 200, you say?
Yeah.
Yep. Okay, that will do. We won't spend too long on this. Do you want to put a different guess in? Yeah, go for it. That's okay. So actually, it's only 180, so your white wine. But it is equivalent to walking 2 miles in terms of walking off those calories, so you might want to be aware of that. And the slice of pizza is a standard slice of pizza, which I think is a bit smaller in Britain than it is here, but there we go. But it's a slice of pizza. But you can come and compare. We have, we're very aware your portion sizes tend to be rather more generous than ours, but unfortunately we're catching up. Okay, pina colada, nice sweetened beverage. 380, 400, okay, 450. So there's a big hit. And cocktails are getting more and more popular, we understand. People are consuming a meal in their glass. That's quite a lot. And a pint of lager, which is 568 mils, as I said before. Not as sweet as either the wine or the pina colada, but more of it. Anybody want to guess? Okay, all right, 170. So almost the same as the wine. Okay. All right, so I'm not going to spend long on this because I think I'm probably running out of time. But so there we go. Equivalent to an ice cream cone. This is where it starts to get interesting, really, I think, to make the comparisons for people. Actually, what would you have chosen? Okay. Vodka and tonic, not very much. One of the things we've got to be really careful about is encouraging people to switch from high-calorie drinks to low-calorie drinks as well. Are we actually going to put them onto spirits? And there's a mixed message there. We actually don't know whether that's a good thing or a bad thing. You know, if you have a single measure of spirits, it's probably not a bad thing. If you decide to go and drink half a bottle of it instead of a couple of pints of beer, probably a bad thing. So we have to be really cautious about what we may be saying by labelling and by giving people that information. But that's one banana. Okay, so what are we doing next? What we've already done, which I should have said, is produced a position statement on labelling of alcoholic drinks, which is on our website and free to all. We spent a day on a massive media campaign. My colleagues in external relations put out press releases, and we had a lot of, about three or four of us spent most of 24 hours on TV, on radio, speaking to the media, very extensive coverage, in fact all around the world, covered, reached many millions of people, very exciting and a lot of interest, because this is a quirky area, it's new and it grabbed people's interest very rapidly. And that interest has been maintained to some extent. We need to understand better what it is that labelling might do in terms of helping people to make better choices, both in terms of the amount of alcohol they drink and the amount of calories they consume. We think that the industry should be interested in voluntary labelling. So far, one of the big manufacturers has gone down that route of voluntary labelling. Whether they do that transparently or not, I think, is a moot point. They're labelling, they're beginning their mock label. I don't really want to promote them, so I'm not going to tell you who they are, but I can tell people afterwards if they went to look at their website. They're looking at labelling bottles of wine, but using a very small glass to tell you the calorie value, which I think is not quite as transparent as we think would be nice to do. Am I out of time? Thank you. And the other thing that we are very keen to do, which is partly why we set up the campaign when we did, is to try to change the minds of the European Union. The European Commission was asked to publish their report on labelling of alcoholic drinks by December of last year, and we're still waiting for it. The European Parliament voted to see this report in April this year because they realised it was late. We did a lot of lobbying along with other organisations that European Parliament should be taking this issue seriously. So they said, yes, we want to take it seriously. They voted in favour of receiving a policy document, which hasn't yet emerged. So there's a lot of work to be done still if we're going to try to take this issue seriously. So we're looking for other European countries to join us more strenuously in the campaign, and that's beginning to happen. And anything else, I'll be very happy to talk about afterwards. Thank you.